You're listening to Around Comics, episode 194. Everybody, Chris Niesman here alongside Mr. Tom Gators.
Hello.
If you couldn't guess, this is a little different type of episode for us.
It's just like an emergency, oh shit, we have to do an episode.
We are. It's the fill-in episode.
It's the fill-in issue.
Actually, this is our road trip episode. Had a little bit of a scheduling conflict earlier this week at Dark Tower, i.e., my wife made some family plans that I was expected to be at. But Tom and I were already planning on heading up to the great city of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, to take in a Milwaukee Brewers Houston Astros game. So we are coming to you from I-90 as we head up to Milwaukee. And if your Midwest geography is a little off, Milwaukee is 90 miles due north of Chicago, right up the Lake Michigan shoreline. And admittedly,
air smells so much better when you cross that border into Wisconsin.
Sweet smelling Wisconsin.
Yeah, the sweet Wisconsin air.
You know, I haven't spent nearly enough time in Milwaukee since I moved to Chicago, and it was really a nice little town. Every time I go there, I enjoy it. And but for you, it's kind of like going home.
A little bit. I'm from Green Bay, which is, you know, a couple hours north of Milwaukee. But, you know, you get back into Milwaukee, you see a lot of overweight people, a lot of pretty obvious underage drinkers, you know. It's a traditional Wisconsin cultural,
pork,
you know.
It's a pork and beer town.
It's mostly almost and ranch dressing on everything.
Don't get me started on the brandy.
It's like the waiting place at a baseball game.
Nice. Well, you know, we've talked about it a few times, but not really in depth. And I think that every comic fan has this remembrance of how they grew up being a comic fan, and kind of like everything in life, we have a tendency of thinking it was the same for everybody. How I grew up is obviously very different than how you grew up.
Well,
being in Southern Illinois,
I was raised by wolves.
The Green Bay Wolves.
Not only did no one else read comics, no one else could read. Period. No one could talk to no one about anything.
Talk about a niche market.
I know, exactly.
Well, what was it like growing up in Green Bay, and how were comics a part of your childhood?
I was the one kid that read DC Comics. All my other friends read Marvel Comics, and they thought DC Comics were for kids.
I think that was true, not just in Green Bay.
Yeah.
Maybe it is all the same.
It is. We just discovered life is the same everywhere. So I was the only kid that, you know, so I, not only was I a subset of the normal population with the fact that I read comics, but I was the one kid who didn't really like Wolverine all that much, you know, when everyone else was, you know, had their underwear in a bind about how totally awesome Wolverine was.
I actually am wearing Wolverine underwear right now.
Oh, God. Oh, I can't wait for them to have another character with swords, you know. And I was just like, I like elongated man. I think he's nifty.
What was the comic book shop like in Green Bay where you first started, or did you start buying comics at a comic shop?
I didn't start buying comics at a comic shop. The first set of comics I got were all like secondhand stuff from relatives, and it was all older than actually the stuff that was out at the time. I had all these coverless, like, 100-pagers from the late 70s.
So your love of old book smell started early.
Yeah, and that's why my taste tend to a fan that would probably be about 8 years older than I actually am. Because when I started reading comics, it must have been, like, seven, you know, it was old 100-pagers. So I was a very voracious reader as a kid. I learned to read really fast, and I just like read anything I could get my hands on, and so I had all these old comics. And then when I realized that comics, I could buy new ones, like there were new ones that came out, I was a little thrown off, because when I started buying them, it was right after Crisis on Infinite Earths, and everything was totally different from the old books that I had just read when I was like 6 months ago. And it didn't click in my head that those books I'd read were like 8 years old.
Sure.
Like they were just really old books, and because I never looked at the dates, you know, when they were written. To me, they were just books.
So you had your first fanboy moment of, this is different.
This is different. Aquaman doesn't have a sword. So it was a bit of a shock, and then I was like, I don't understand what happened to Barry Allen, you know, and I started to piece it, as a kid, you probably have more, I think, flexible tastes, or more, sure. your immediate reaction to something isn't, oh god, this is so confusing.
Well, everything is new anyway.
Everything's new to you in the first place, so if you're interested, you just keep going until you find out what the answer, you know, what the answer is. And so that led to me like digging around for like old issues when I was like 8 or 9, because I couldn't figure out like what the hell was going on. And the shop in my town, when I first started reading comics, there was a couple shops and they were all terrible. Then there's one, I think it's called Mark's Great Escape, that I used to go to, but a horribly overpriced back issues.
Oh yeah.
So then that in
the dawn of the collector market.
The dawn of the collector's market, and I just pick up scraps here and there from, you know, what I was reading.
Sure. For me, I was we talked about it before. I was a big Doctor Who fan, and you know, found my first Doctor Who comic at Campus Cards and Collectibles, which I grew up in a little town called Marion. And it was just one of the things that you did growing up is you would ride your bike into town, and yeah, I lived actually just outside of town. And so a group of friends of and I would meet.
Bunch of roughnecks riding bikes around town.
Yep, wearing leather jackets. Yep, throwing firecrackers. We would meet at the comic shop. That was just kind of our default where we would meet. And everyone kind of liked comics, and that's kind of how I started getting into it. And would ride my bike up there on the weekends and hang out. And I was probably 12 at the time. And did that for several years until I could drive. And Campus Comics, there's not a college in Marion, but there is in Carbondale. And Campus Comics started as kind of the college comic book store.
Yeah.
And so we would go to the Mecca. We'd go to the home store. My mom would load us up in the minivan, and we'd go there. That was the big deal on the weekend.
Well, that, in your mind, that's one of those things where it's like, that shop is the greatest place ever. And then in hindsight, you look back, you're like, that shop wasn't that great. But when you're a kid, you're like,
oh, it had everything you ever wanted,
yeah,
man.
It's the step up, man.
Sure. It's like, one day I'll save up that $20 and buy that issue of X-Men 137.
Did you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I out of that store, I probably acquired X-Men probably 105, and then had it all the way into the early 200s.
Yeah.
You know, which I was thinking earlier this week, X-Men 500 just came out.
Yeah.
And for me, as an X-Men fan, it's hard for me because I grew up on the X-Men. They were always my favorite book. And just kind of looking back on it, that book kind of died for me at X-Men 200.
Yeah.
That, you know, the whole trial of Magneto, that ended the story for me. That book ended that entire story. And you saw the redemption of Magneto.
Yeah.
And after that, it never had the same gravity.
It's one of those things. I think it's just true for, all characters, is that, you know, you read 500 issues of one story, there's a beginning and an end for you.
Yeah.
As a reader. I mean, that's the nature of the, you know, you might continue to occasionally read, you know, people who read Spider-Man, to them, there's probably a point where the story kind of ended for them. And they still may pick it up every once in a while and enjoy the stories, but really, it's like with the, you know, I know there's been more Flash issues, but for me, really, the Flash sort of ended when Johns left, and all the issues after that have been, you know, they've been of varying quality, but whenever I think
it's a different story.
Yeah, it's a different story, and whether or not you hold that tight to you or not, or whether you're just reading it,
I think for me, my X-Men story started with Giant Size 1 and ended with 200. I think that told the story that needed to be told for me. But, you know, there are other people, you know, Ron over at IDN, yeah. He is an X guy, and that will always be his book. So, yeah. You know, there have been other stories that, you know, that have come after that. But, another thing, going back to growing up with comics and whatnot, we're so ingrained now. Like, Wednesday is New Comic Book Day, and you go to the shop on Wednesdays. When I was growing up, they came out on Wednesdays, but Saturday was always Comic Book Day for me.
Yeah.
That is when, especially in high school, when I would drive over the satellite store in Marion, it closed down, and...
Just follow these cars.
Okay. don't go into the construction
site. Yeah, follow these cars.
But, for me, Saturday was always Comic Book Day, and... a lot of it was, they were making so many comics, you weren't ever really worried about something selling out. They were always going to have Uncanny X-Men and Fantastic Four there, but the Saturday trek to the comic shop is how I remember growing up on comics. And, either, my mom taking a group of us over in the van, or, whenever I could drive.
It's Comic Book Day!
Yep, and go over there.
Nah, they didn't used to sell out. Maybe I just didn't care.
Other big happenings since the last time we sat down, Dark Knight came out, and we've both had a chance to see it.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of it?
I enjoyed it quite a bit. I thought it was really just a good movie that happened to also be about comic book characters.
Are you ready to call it the greatest comic book movie ever?
That's such a qualifying statement to make, because it's like... I will say this about it, though. What impressed me the most is the most memorable scenes to me in that movie aren't special effects scenes. They're scenes which is two actors in a room, and they might be dressed up like the Joker and the Batman, but there's no CGI in that scene. There's no big explosion. There's no, gratuitous fight scene with it's just a really intense scene between two actors, and that's what really impressed me about the movie, was that it seemed so, it didn't have that flair of like CGI everywhere.
Well, I think that's the whole premise of Nolan's Batman world, and we talked about this really briefly this week on 11 o'clock, that the whole world that he has set up there is plausible. It's, maybe not probable, but it's plausible. And I love the fact that everything that happens in that movie could happen in real life.
Yeah, I mean, I think... Now, I don't want to get into an Iron Man versus Dark Knight thing, I think they're two very different movies.
That's like comparing Iron Man comic book and Batman comic book.
Yeah, I mean, they're two very different things. I think... You look at Iron Man, and... For large portions of that movie, it's Robert Downey Jr. in special effects. And Robert Downey Jr. is so entertaining that it works. And the movie's very entertaining, and it's very good, and it definitely played... I mean, both of those movies played to their strengths of what they had, and they didn't waste too much time dicking around with other stuff that they couldn't do, Dark Knight just seems so, thick with character stuff and... interactions between people, and it seemed like everything made sense and everything fit in. Because for me, in a lot of comic book movies, there's always one part of it or like one character that doesn't seem to quite fit, and that didn't really happen in Dark Knight. It seemed like everything
my
fit
only,
together.
And spoilers, if you haven't seen the movie, and I think we should probably, you know, talk about it you know, a little bit more in depth. But the one thing, and I think Sal and I both kind of felt this way coming out of it, was I felt like...
Follow the cars.
Follow
those cars, Chris. This is a very confusing area.
A lot of road construction I-90 here. It's summer in the upper Midwest. One of my only, not even really criticism, but how I just think that it would have been better for me if it had broke differently, is the end of the movie. I thought it was about 20 minutes too long, and I would have loved to have seen them keep Harvey around and make that the third movie. I think that they could have wrapped things up with the Joker, and then Harvey, you could have seen Harvey's kind of descent into madness, and then he goes off, and I think that sets you up perfectly for a third movie.
But I see, part of me though also thinks, listen, don't get over obsessed with setting up another movie.
And this is my point, is that I think it was almost too much to have resolution with Two-Face and Harvey at the end. And I kind of, not that I was looking at my watch at the end of it, but I was really kind of hoping that the movie was going to wrap up. So I thought it was maybe a little too much.
I think the thing though is, if you don't wrap up Harvey's part of the story, nothing gets wrapped up in that movie.
Because of the whole shining white knight.
Yeah, it's like nothing. You would get to the end and you'd be like, oh, okay, so, you know, the Joker gets caught and now Harvey's just something. You know, I think there had to be, something had to close up, because the Joker story can't really close up, because that's the nature of that part of the story, is that he's going to be at the thorn in Batman's side forever. There is no closure to that.
Even though you're never going to see the Joker.
No, you're never going to see it again. The idea is that there can't be any closure to that part of the story. Because so you got to give him something that, you got to end with something. You have to be like, here's this part of the story. And I think they did set up a nice thing for the, when they do a sequel.
When that thing makes $1 billion, they're going to make a third movie.
Setting it up that, you know, Batman is a wanted, you know, he's a wanted man, and he's seen as a murderer, and there could be interesting things you can do with that.
You think they're gonna do the kind of the pitfall of all comic book franchises, and that they're gonna ratchet it up to, they're gonna turn it up to 11. This one's gonna have 4 bad guys.
I don't know.
Kind of trying to think of who they have left. I don't think that anyone really wants to see a Penguin again. Maybe Catwoman, Killer Croc.
I don't think Killer Croc, unless you make Killer Croc just the Killer Croc who's the deformed guy.
Yeah, which is what they would do. It's back to that plausibility of it. But I think they're kind of running out of the plausible.
I think the Penguin is sort of, you can play him as what he sort of is in the comics. It's like a demented
businessman.
you could make it visually
if they would have Jason Aaron write Penguin. How did you like that one?
Oh, I thought it was awesome. I thought Pearson's art was awesome. Amazing.
Yeah, if you're not reading Arkham Asylum, or Joker's Asylum?
Joker's Asylum.
It is really, really good. I've been pleasantly surprised by just about all of them, except for the first Joker one, which I thought was, it was okay.
Yeah.
But everyone after that, did you read the Scarecrow one?
I haven't read the Scarecrow one yet.
The art, first of all, kudos to DC for taking a chance on some art. It's a Wando.
Yeah. I saw that it was a very different style of art for a Batman story.
Really cool. Really, really cool. So, yeah, I'm digging the, Joker Asylum. It's funny that each one is a number one issue. What do they have that figured out, don't they?
Number one! First and only. You only get this one once.
Should we make this a miniseries? Let's have each one be a number one issue.
Did you read New York 4? That Minx book by Ryan Kelly?
It's sitting on my nightstand.
I read it. It was really good. Yeah.
I like some of the Minx stuff.
If you like local... I think you will very much enjoy this. It's the same team. I mean, it's a much lighter story. It's more of like a teen soap opera, which is really weird to read a Brian Wood, like, teen soap opera, sort of like four college girls all with their different problems.
A little different than DMZ.
A little different from DMZ, but in sort of the same way that Azzarello working on that Dr. 13 thing was sort of a departure from... It was really... It shows how good of a writer Brian Wood is, that he wrote that, yeah. And it was extremely compelling.
I talked to Azzarello in Chicago about that. Yeah. I had him sign my Dr. 13 trade. So it was really nice to read something so different from you. It's, you know, I love 100 Bullets, but it's really nice to see you, you know, kind of flex some different muscles. And he looked at me, he's like, ah, don't worry, it all comes from the same fucked up, demented place.
It all stems from the same set of problems. It just comes out differently.
Which, man, it's looking back on Dr. 13, I loved it when it came out, but I'm such a big fan of Cliff Chang's work now,
yeah,
that to go back and read that again, I really, really enjoy Cliff Chang's art.
Well, I also liked how Anthro with his Mr. Terrific-style leather jacket made an appearance in Booster Gold with the Anthro written on the side, like, Mr. Terrific. I got my diesel wound up and she's been running like never before. There's a speed zone ahead on the right and I don't see a cop inside. 6 days on the road and I'm gonna make it home tonight. I got 10 forward gears and Georgia overdrive. I'm digging little white pills in my eyes.
Speaking of Booster, how'd you like the wrap up?
I thought it was good.
Yeah,
I thought it was a very nice ending to a story in a book that I am curious to see how well it will do outside of John's and Kat's
yeah,
working on it.
I think it's gonna be a very different book. I think Rick will do fine with it for a couple issues.
Yeah,
and he's made it very clear that, you know, hey, this is that I'm not doing the an ongoing. This is 2 issues that I'm doing, and you know, I hope that they don't keep doing that with Rick. I'd like to see him get on something a little bit longer.
I think Booster Gold, though. It's true that you need a writer who knows a lot of the history of the DC universe to, like,
yeah,
because part of the humor and the fun of that series is like going back and
bumping into the cosmic treadmill.
Yeah, or having a zero issue, or going dealing with, you know, DC 1 million and all the sort of jokes and humor about that. But I'll be interested to see what ends up happening with that book, which was always sort of a rather surprisingly good seller for a B-list character, you know, selling in the 30,000s for...
Do you think that's kind of the John's effect, or is that... Do you think that does have a dramatic effect on sales? Is that there are enough Jeff Johns fans out there that they'll pick something up kind of no matter what you
write? I think it definitely helps.
Yeah.
I think it'd be foolish to say that. Yep. There's 30,000 Booster Gold fans.
Well, there's another guy out there for DC right now that I think could write a book like that just as well or almost as well, and that's Tomasi. I really like the stuff that Tomasi is doing,
yes,
but having him on Booster, I don't think it would have sold nearly.
No. Though he had, Green Lantern Corps has done very well since the end of the Sinestro Corps war. That, you know, it got its customary crossover boost, but it's actually kept most of the...
it's a good book.
Yeah, it is. The Gleason's art is fantastic in it. They just wrapped up that Mongol story.
You know, I'm waiting. I'm a trade waiter on that. I actually just finished up getting all the Sinestro Corps hardcovers.
Yeah.
And I'm picking all those up in trays. Was the Mongol story good?
Yes, it was. It was very good. The art was fantastic.
Cool.
In it. They had a very sad ending, though. I won't tell you which one of the Green Lanterns dies.
Oh.
It was very, yeah. I was very upset.
Not Chip.
No, they wouldn't kill Chip. Another
again.
No. But did you read the new Iron Fist? The Dwayne
Swarzynski.
Yeah, Dwayne S, as I like to call him.
I need to go back and reread it. I did a very fanboy thing, and
oh,
I read it when I shouldn't have. I wasn't in the I was kind of hurried. I wasn't in the best of moods, and I was already coming into that kind of puckering
because this isn't Brubaker Infraction.
Exactly. And I read it, and I thought he was really trying to do what Brubaker Infraction were doing on Iron Fist.
Yeah.
But it seemed at the time, it seemed a little bit of a pale imitation of that. It didn't have the same. Kind of the same magic to it. And there's a lot going on.
I'm
going to
disagree with you.
You liked it?
I did. I thought it had a harder edge to it than the Fraction Brubaker stuff. The Luke Cage like fight scene with I know everyone was freaked out about the art and everyone's like, oh, David Aja isn't on it anymore. Well, David Aja drew, 60%?
Yeah.
Maybe of the 17 issues? So, for me, David Aja is not the visual identity of that book.
There was no visual identity to that book.
Yeah, so, you know, you still have the rusty flashbacks. I thought it was good. I think he is continuing on the story that everyone liked.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think people would be more upset if he just dropped all that and just did something else.
I really hope that they keep the weapons storyline going, and you see how the ultimate weapons or I hope they keep all of those characters around in some regards. I think they're really interesting.
I just thought there was a little harder edge to it than the Brubaker Fraction stuff had, which is the nature of the flashback being the guy in the Western, the Chinese Iron Fist in the Western town, you know, getting into a fight. I think that's a very different type of story than Fraction and Brubaker were telling with their flashback ones tended to be a little softer, not as hard edged as that, and the fight scene with Luke Cage and him fighting the guys, I mean, that's something that we hadn't seen really in the Fraction Brubaker
series
since probably the first story arc, you know, so I think he brought back a little bit more of the, you know, the actual fighting part of it, you know.
Did you see the little homage to the old Power Man and Iron Fist ads in Marvel this week?
Yes.
I forget how they worded it, but it was, you know, Iron Fist will kick your ass if you don't buy this.
Yeah.
That's what they're saying.
Hey, but Mars Cheese Castle.
What's a Mars Cheese Castle?
It's a place you can buy cheese and various types of meats at the Mars Cheese Castle. It's a tourist trap.
Ah, okay.
But it's not a castle.
Can we get fried cheese curds?
You can get regular cheese curds and fry them on your own.
Okay.
And there's Bob and Nelson's Wisconsin cheese.
Yeah, that's one of the things I love about Wisconsin is the cheese stand.
Yep.
Do you see that anywhere else in the world?
Mars Cheese Castle. Sam always makes me stop there, even though I'm like, oh, God. Like,
no more
cheese. No more cheese. I love Wisconsin, but can we not get any more cheese?
Wisconsin. Cheese, beer, brandy. Sausage,
brandy.
Oils.
Brandy.
God, brandy. Don't get me started on the brandy.
Brandy.
They will put brandy in anything here.
Yeah.
What is the fascination with brandy cokes? And don't
get old people.
Old people
love drinking here. And when you get old here, you start drinking brandy.
You don't put brandy in a Manhattan. You don't make a Manhattan out of brandy.
I don't. That is something I have not commonly seen in Wisconsin. Now, like, an old fashioned is different. I just rolled down the window. An old fashioned is different from a Manhattan, right?
Yes.
Brandy old fashioned is a much more Wisconsin. That would be what I would associate as the brandy drink of choice in Wisconsin.
Brandy old fashioned.
Yeah.
Wow, that's gotta be sweet.
Yes, it is. Oh yeah. I mean, it's like it's an old woman drink.
Yeah. Did you call an old-fashioned an old-woman drink, or was that Vince?
Vince called them old-fashioned.
Okay. Old well, maybe it is, but I don't like it.
Oh, no, I mean, when I go to Door County, I will have a brandy old-fashioned, because that's what you do.
That's
you go to the bar, and they have like stations for making it everywhere. You have your cherries, your bitters, like at five different points, because they make so many of them that they have all the stuff out just ready to go, because that's all anyone gets for their
your sugar syrup, your
You got the whole, it's all fucking lined up. It's all lined up. What else did I read? Let me see. I wanted to remind myself about stuff I read.
Picked up the American flag. Finally came out.
Yeah. How does it look?
It looks great. Which, you know, reminds me. We didn't mention it at the first, so Cameron and the guys will be upset. This episode is sponsored by InStockTrades.com. Where waiting for the trade has never been easier. You can pick up all of your collected editions there at great discounted prices. And right now, they are sponsoring our Book of the Month selection, which is Black Hole by Charles Burns. It is a seminal work of Charles Burns. We've been teasing it for about 2 years.
2 years
now.
Yeah.
But it came out in two ways, hardcover and the trade paperback. You can find both of them at InStock Trades for 35% off. They actually lowered the price on it just for us. And so you can pick up the trade is like $11.50, or the hardcover, which I love, is $16.22.
I picked up the soft cover. It still looks really nice. Yep. Still very well. I mean, it's a nice. It's a nice, hard, soft cover, you know, like a sturdy,
yep,
well put together book.
It's very good. And remember, all orders over $50 ship free from InStock. It's where I buy all my trades, and so should you. So, but the reason that I was reminded of that is the American flag omnibus, yep, came out, and it's available at InStock as well. So if you don't want to drop the full $50 on that, I'm sure they, yep, have that at a
nice
discount. It's gorgeous. It is. I really like. Kind of this movement away from the oversized hardcovers. As much as I like those, whenever you get these really big, like, number of pages books, they can be a bear to read. I love the Marvel omnibuses, but it's real hard for me
to take those around.
Yeah, it's kind of hard for me to take the Amazing Spider-Man omnibus and, you know, bring that into bed.
Read it on the train, you know, pull out this giant fucking book out of your bag.
Tripping with my two favorite allies, fully loaded, we got snacks and supplies. It's time to leave this town, it's time to steal away. Let's go get lost anywhere in the USA. Let's go get lost, let's go get lost. Blue, you sit so pretty west of the one.
Starman or American Flag, that kind of stuff. It's nice. Rumors
that DC wants to move away from the Absolute line, and they want to put more stuff into that sort of Starman omnibus, which I actually kind of think is a good idea.
Absolutely. Well, think of it this way: how many things do they have left that they can put into an Absolute?
Not many.
Yeah, it's, you know, once you get past the things that probably could fit into the Absolute line very well aren't going to sell. I would love to see, like, the Liberty Files, the JSA Elseworld stuff.
It's not going to sell as a... It's not going to sell. What else did I see? They're coming out with hardcovers of Alan Moore's Swamp Thing.
Mm-hmm. They're doing that, and Preacher are both going to get hardcover.
I don't have any of the trades of Swamp Thing. I used to have a bunch of issues, but they were really badly waterlogged, you know.
But they've been in a swamp?
Literally, they've been in a swamp, and I think I just ditched them at one point when I moved somewhere, and I thought, I'll just pick up the trade someday. And I never did, so now that they're coming out with hardcovers, I'm excited. Those are really amazing stories. So
I did that like I did with the Starman. I bought the first two trades of Swamp Thing and the first two trades of Starman, and then I found out that they were coming out. Well, yeah. Starman, I found out was coming out in hardcover, and it's been rumored for so long that that Swamp Thing was going to get some sort of hardcover treatment that I went ahead and I said, okay, you know, I'll just wait until those come out in hardcover.
Have you been reading Black Summer?
I got the last issue, and I'm going to sit down maybe tonight and reread the whole seven-issue series. Did you like the wrap-up?
Yeah. I'd give the whole thing like a, you know, like a B minus. Okay. Yeah, it was. I think it had problems in the story. But the art is still, I mean, the art's gorgeous.
Well, they reap.
Yeah, the art is gorgeous on it. And the resolution's, I think, a little safe, which surprised me.
Ellis played it safe?
I mean, not safe in the sense of, like, a happy ending, but I thought very sort of like, oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
That's how it ends. You know, like, I thought it, for the art alone, I think it's a fantastic series.
I've enjoyed it.
Yeah.
You know, honestly, I've liked most of the stuff that Ellis has put out from Avatar. I haven't read all of it, mind you. That's what's the new kind of cheesecakey story he's got?
Anna Mercury.
Anna Mercury. I haven't read that, but you know, even like Black Ass, I thought was a pretty decent zombie story. Nothing spectacular, but I thought it was a good zombie story. If you haven't read Creasy.
Yeah. Crusade.
It's one of my favorite things that came out last year.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot.
I also wanted to mention, we haven't talked about it all, but I've been really enjoying Trinity quite a bit. Yeah, it's been really good. And I think,
I caught up last night.
Yeah, I just finished the 8th issue, and I'm like, you know, this is really quite a nice little story that they're telling. And
Bastards are going to make me go track down the JLA Avengers.
Yes, I have that, yeah. It ties in a little bit to JLA Avengers.
You have probably, the single issues?
I have the hardcover.
Oh, you got the hardcover.
Yeah.
Oh, look at you.
That's one of my favorites. That's one of my favorite stories of all time, is the JLA Avengers.
Yeah. Do I need to try and track the hardcover down? Is it worth it?
I like it a lot. I think it's worth it, but I mean, you can get the issues for a very reasonable price online.
Well, they've got the obviously the hardcover.
They're coming out with the trade in September.
Okay, maybe I'll do that.
October.
Yeah, because you're going to end up dropping about 100 bills on that hardcover.
The hardcover is kind of hard to find these days.
Does it have a supplemental book with it?
Yeah, the supplemental book is about the aborted first attempt at a JLA Avengers in the 80s.
Yeah.
It talks a little bit about the story. It has the pages that Perez had already drawn for it, and it talks about why it fell apart, like the shooter Giordano problem.
You mean shooter had a problem with something?
I don't want to blame. I think it was just a miscommunication on what was going to be.
What I love is that has stayed in continuity. It's canon.
It's part of DC continuity very much. Yeah. That it gets mentioned. Music likes to mention it every once in a while. I've been really enjoying Trinity. I think all the problems people had with Countdown, non-existent in Trinity.
Yeah.
It's its own nice story on its own.
I'm enjoying it. I really like how they're using the backup stories to tell little sub-stories that then come into the main story.
Yeah.
I love what's going on with Hawkman now.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to do some studying up on Gangbuster.
Yes, Gangbuster. For someone who doesn't know much about the DC universe, or someone who's looking for a good way to get into it, Trinity would probably be a pretty good way to do it. I mean, you have seen, you've seen the Justice League, you've seen, you know, obviously the big three, you've seen sort of the periphery characters around those characters, the backup stories have introduced some new characters and brought back some old villains, and it's self-contained in that you don't need. It doesn't tie into anything else. The art, Bagley's art's been really, it's been really nice.
I've actually liked the art on the backups.
The backups have been great too.
And not just Mike. I mean, no. Norton's doing a nice job, but the art on the backups have been cool.
I'm not the biggest McDaniel fan sometimes.
Yeah, but it's only 8 pages.
No, I don't know, but I actually, I didn't like his art on Arena. I just thought it was a little too much on the loose side.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is a little tighter, and I like it more because his style, I think, for my own personal taste, I prefer this sort of a little bit tighter than what it was in Arena, where that thing's kind of spun out of control visually, and it was hard to get what's going on. But yeah, I love how I'm calling him a backup story. I don't think is fair in a way, because it's just the other half of the story.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's like. Yeah. It ties into everything else in the story.
Hadn't DiDio kind of said that to us in Seattle, that they weren't really backup stories. Yeah. He kind of foreshadowed to that, that they were going to be a part of the story,
yeah,
that were going to kind of operate separately and then get tied in. So it's worked out. Well, hey, some San Diego news I wanted to touch on before we wrapped up. First of all, Jeff Johns and Van Sciver are bringing Barry back and Flash Rebirth. So everybody out there wants to know what Tom Caters thinks about Flash Rebirth.
Be good. I see no reason to think it'll be bad.
They're bringing Barry back.
I mean, what you have is you have two very talented creators, probably. If Johns isn't at the peak of how good he is at writing right now,
oh god!
I mean, because right now, everything he's writing is really good. I see no reason to think that this also won't be good.
He's gonna do a 180 on this.
Yeah, you have two guys who love the characters, are gonna be able to tell a story that they want to tell, and I just think it's gonna be. There's nothing in it that would make me think this is gonna be bad, you know, like, unless they're like, oh, and it will be, oh, I'm sorry, but it'll be printed on toilet paper. it'll be on toilet paper.
It's going to be Johns and Van Sciver doing a Flash story.
Yeah.
And, yeah, is it not about Wally, but it's still going to be a good story, I'll
bet. Johns isn't going to just toss Wally to this. I was reading one of the panels where someone was worried about Wally, and Jeff Johns said, I would think by now I would prove what a big fan of Wally I was. I wrote the book for 5 years. I don't think he's gonna like kill Wally off or shove Wally to the side.
Oh, good. Oh, I can write the real Flash now.
Yeah, no.
Later, chump.
I think you look at what he did for the whole cast of Green Lantern characters. I know there's people that say Kyle Rayner doesn't have a big enough role. Well, Kyle Rayner had a 12-issue miniseries about him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's featured in Green Lantern Corps. He didn't disappear.
You know, not every character can be at the front of the stage all the time.
Yeah.
Some characters are. Batman is always going to be.
Comes and goes, man.
Batman is always going to be front. You know, front stage, right there with Superman, yeah, and you know certain other characters. But yeah, it's for Kyle. Maybe it's time for 2 or 3 years of him to get recharged, you know, and for someone to say, hey, I've got a great Kyle Rayner story.
Recharge.
That it's time to, that it's recharged. That was a bad pun.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you see, you know, Booster. How long was Booster gone?
For years. I mean, he was a joke.
Now we know why he was a joke.
Yeah, now we know why he was a joke. I mean, until Countdown to Infinite Crisis, I mean, you didn't see Booster or Blue Beetle, really. A ton around until they...
Hell, even on the Marvel side, until Disassembled, the Avengers were kind of an also-ran book. You never heard people get excited about the Avengers or Captain America. Yeah. I mean, those are, you know, the Avengers as a team and Captain America as a character. Cap was really he was always going to be an A-list character, but he was really kind of had...
A-list book.
Yeah, yeah. They're going to be just fine with Simon on that. Thunderbolts are a team that I know that there are Thunderbolts fans out there that are passionate about that book. I never got into it.
He's going to kill some of them. I think he immediately replaced them which was why I was kind of, I was like, oh, okay, well that makes, he obviously doesn't want the group of badasses who are all, you know.
Venom and Norman and...
Yeah.
Whatever.
The original, the original Busick, forget who did the art. I really liked that original concept of the Thunderbolts. It was such an amazing thing when it was revealed who they were, and you were just like, oh shit, you know, like, they were all B-list villains mm-hmm. who became heroes, and then when you find out, you're like, wow, that is the most, I remember being, like, literally, I put the book down, I was like, wow, I can't believe that that's who the Thunderbolts are.
I need to go back and read some old
Thunderbolts. You need to read the old Thunderbolts, because, you know, it was right around the time when, like, Heroes Reborn or whatever, when all the heroes disappeared. And all of a sudden, you have the Thunderbolts, which is this team of new heroes. And then the reveal is that
they're all B-list villains.
They're B-list villains who are pretending to be heroes. And then, of course, some of them actually start to like being heroes.
Yeah, good guys.
And they do become good guys. I remember when they revealed that, I was just like, no shit, I can't believe they did that. And it was like... One of those rare times when I was really genuinely surprised. But
well, that's Thunderbolts were right there with New Warriors for me as books that I just didn't have interest in. Plus, I was out of comics at the time, and I never took the time to get back with them. You know, talking about how villains can become villains and what pushes them over the edge.
Yeah.
Have you watched Dr. Horrible's sing along blog yet?
Yes, I did.
How did you like it?
That was pretty good.
Yeah.
I'm a little sick of Joss Whedon. He's become like comic book Brett Favre to me. I'm just sick. I'm sick of his name. I'm sick of everyone talking about how awesome he is.
Okay, well, we won't talk about
that. Yeah, I'm sad. I just like, oh God, more about Joss Whedon. I hear Joss Whedon touched a sick boy and he's okay now. Joss Whedon looks like he's having so much fun out there. He's having a great time. It's like, oh God, please stop talking. Yeah, let's not talk about. I'm a little sick of Joss Whedon.
Let's talk about Brett Favre.
No, I don't want to talk about
back?
Brett Favre.
You know, we are.
He's going to play for the Jets.
We're coming back into Favre country here.
Yeah. Can you feel it? Can you feel the?
We're in Wisconsin.
Yeah, we are. We're getting pretty close.
Well, of course, the Cheese Shack. They don't have those.
We don't have those in Illinois.
Do you have fireworks stands here?
Yes.
Okay.
Not all year, though. They might be gone.
Okay.
No. But
not like in Missouri where they have them all year round.
No. One last thing I wanted to mention is, I don't know if you saw this, but DC acquired the rights to the Archie heroes.
Yeah, what is that about? Is this like Jughead?
Jughead's not going to... Archie had a series of superheroes that they did for a while.
This is where John Suntress should be in the backseat, because he knows all of these.
Yeah, and they've been in sort of publishing limbo on and off. They've had revivals a little bit here and there. Well, DC acquired the rights to them, and they're going to introduce them into the DC universe.
Like, who are we talking about here?
I forget. The Fly, like all these. I can't remember any of the names now.
Okay.
But, I mean, and the JMS Brave and the Bold, some of the stories are going to be... way he's going to introduce those characters into the DC universe.
Oh, that sounds fun.
And the Milestone characters, if you remember Milestone, which was the, you know, the African-American superheroes, you know, McDuffie worked on a lot of them.
They are
being brought into the DC universe as parts of the DC universe. So Static, who was a character much beloved by a lot of people.
Oh, yeah, okay.
But is now
his own cartoon series?
Yep, is now going to be in the DC universe proper as a character in the DC universe, which... For a lot of people, I mean, that's really... I really like Static, and I really like those books. I think it's a really cool thing. And I get a little bit of, like, that excitement that I think people probably had back in the day when DC used to use the multiverse to bring in the Charlton. You know, like, that was the way
Charlton
they would...
Charlton and Fawcett.
The quality characters and all that. I'm like... And that, so it's kind of a cool thing to see some... old characters.
Yeah, that was my first inclination, is that this is not something that is new. This has been done before, and DC has actually done it a lot.
Has done it many, many times. Yeah. Just bringing in other companies' characters.
Did you see the news on BPRD 1947?
Yes.
Which I'm very excited about.
Yeah,
still, Mignola and Joss Dysart are going to be writing, just like they did the last series, but Gabriel Ba and Fabio Moon on art.
It's gonna be pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm eagerly looking forward to that. It's gonna be fun.
Umbrella Academy 2 is going to be is going to
see more
out.
Ballet Academy.
Well, that Gerard Way just comes out of nowhere, or actually not nowhere, comes in music, wins an Eisner.
Yeah. Got this writing comics is easy. Why is everyone stressing out so much?
Yeah.
It's easy. New Haunted Tank, a Haunted Tank miniseries from Vertigo. It's going to take place in the Middle East.
Wow.
Yeah, with the ghost of a General Sherman. I forget which ghost it is. In the Middle East with, like, U.S. soldiers. And,
nice, on a tank battalion.
So it's going to be interesting.
Yeah,
to see
what
they
like that there's some really weird offbeat stuff coming up here. It looks like it's my 2009 might be an
interesting
year.
You're going to want to go to the right.
We're going over here?
Yeah.
All right.
This is the last thing I want to say.
Okay.
I picked up the Flash Companion from Tomorrow's. Awesome.
I had your convention experience in Chicago this year.
Yeah.
I bumped into Jeff Johns probably 3 times.
Yeah.
And then I was over, you know, I was like, oh, where's Tom? And then I was over at Norton's table, and the guy who am I taking Layton?
No.
Oh, just down the walk.
Okay.
And then I'm over at Mike's table, and Mike is doing he's finishing up part of a jam piece that a guy is having him do of all Flash rogues.
Yeah.
And so it's all the rogues, and I think Mike was doing maybe a Weather Wizard or something like that.
Yeah.
And so I'm talking to the guy, and I'm like, oh, yeah, my buddy's a big Flash fan, would love this. And he's like, oh, if he's a big Flash fan, you should be looking at this. It was the guy that wrote the Flash Companion, and he had the proof version of it all there and showed me the entire Flash Companion.
It's awesome. I really enjoyed it quite a bit. And I mean, I've been reading it. It's not so much in the style of the Companions where they go like issue by issue and they give, it's more interviews with all the people involved during all the eras. You know, you have interviews or articles about Gardner Fox and Carmen Infantino and Robert Kaniger, and it goes through all the eras, and they talk to pretty much every major writer that's ever worked on The Flash. You know, Kerry Bates, Jeff Johns, Mark Waid, William Messner Loebs, Mike Barron, like anyone who's pretty much touched The Flash, and all the artists. There's a tribute section by Mark Waid about Mike Ringo and his work on The Flash, and interviews with all the artists, like Irv Novick, a couple with Carmine Infantino, who did it at different points.
Collins.
Yeah, they have a section with Collins. So,
one of the things I saw was that the bios on the rogues were really funny. That they had taken a very lighthearted approach to, you know, explaining who Gorilla Grodd is.
Yes, yeah, and it's just a really cool companion. Companion piece. My only criticism so far of it is sometimes the articles seem they weren't written for this. They're excerpts from other things.
Sure.
So sometimes you get annoying overlapping
stuff,
of stuff.
Well, didn't they just say this? Well, yeah, because they covered it.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a different. So it doesn't have that cohesiveness that if everything was written specifically for us, it was. But as far as if you want to learn about the history of how, you know, my favorite part so far is something I didn't quite realize is they're talking about the Flash of Two Worlds where they reintroduce Jay Garrick and they come up with the whole multiverse concept. I forget who. Well, I think it was Carmen Infantino said that back then, to come up with story ideas, he would come up with a cover first, and then Julie Schwartz and whoever the writers would have to come up with a story for it. So he made that cover of the two Flashes running towards somebody to save them as sort of like a, let's see you write a story about
and
this.
And the multiverse was born.
And then Carmen Infantino said, well, I'll be damned, they came up with a story that explained it. And they're like, wow. You know, so I was like, that's a really cool story to think about that. That's how, you know, something that became so important to so much of the history of all those characters, you know.
Sure. Take a little picture of Milwaukee here as we drive in all the broken
tracks. Now let's see if we can figure out.
Well, I'll tell you what, we'll wrap this one up.
Let's wrap it up. We're about to have to focus on
driving.
Yes.
Real quick, first of all, thanks for listening. Drop by the iTunes Music Store if you would, and leave us a friendly message there. It always means a lot to us. You can check out Tom on Tom versus the JLA, which is getting ready to wrap up, right?
Yep, getting
all
close.
All right, so we'll get to know all about Flash hopefully soon. Tom versus the Flash.
Yes.
All right. You can listen
to
me.
We need to go
on this one.
Yeah, 94 West.
Oh, Lapham Boulevard.
Atlanta. There we go.
Hey, there you go. There's a comic tie-in. You can find me every week on 11 o'clock comics. That usually comes out on Thursday morning or Friday morning. Keep going. Oh, take pictures.
94 West, yes.
Oh, okay.
Follow the 94 West.
Follow that car.
Yes.
All right. We'll not go on David Lapham Boulevard.
Yes.
All
okay.
Right. Check out my column, Comic Shots, on Thursday mornings at ifanboy.com, where I'll give you a drink recommendation and a comic book review. So having a lot of fun with that. And Tom, do we got anything? Is that it?
I think so.
Yeah.
I'm
keep
trying
reading
to figure
the
out where we are.
Oh, there goes the iPass. Oh.
Okay.
Did I keep going?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to try and find the baseball stadium.
We might now officially be sort of lost.
Okay. We'll get there.
Yeah.
But, maybe you might hear from us after the baseball game, maybe. So,
maybe.
Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with another episode from Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles. In the meantime...
In between time.
We'll be everywhere in... And around comics.
Around somewhere in Milwaukee.
Oh, God. I'm pulling into the Sitco.
I think we lost and I think we need to go back.
Yeah, listen. Most heaven, West Jamaica, sure is a mountain shining down the river. All my friends there, pulling on those reeds, young and then the mountain. From the old baby home, girl of things, I've been a home, where to make home, I am a mama, take me home, country home.
No, wait a minute.
I heard a voice.
Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and may not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Any reproduction, rebroadcast, or retransmission without the express written consent of Around Comics is strictly prohibited. All content presented in this program is the sole property of Around Comics, and this has been an Around Comics production, copyright 2008.
Mama,